So is this where you usually like work out of?
Yeah, yeah. So this is ours. We own this. It's a co-working space. We've had it for like 8+ years now.
8+ years.
So we just moved downstairs, but they're like a co-working space, so people can rent different spots depending on how many people you have or like what use you need out of it.
For sure.
We got like 30 different companies in here right now.
Yeah, 30. We walked in, damn. I was like, yo, I mean, I've been here once briefly, but I didn't realize the amount of like conference room you guys have, and just,
yeah,
I mean, just aesthetically, bro, it's
fire.
It's definitely sick.
Yeah,
we have like Onset and obviously Alex and them. They used to,
that's right, it's down like downstairs.
Yeah,
right?
They're downstairs. Yeah. And then people like just soul entrepreneurs, like an accountant, this girl that works with like doing resumes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So just like, you know, people that don't need like a big office space,
right,
they can just rent a little station and work from there, and like different random companies.
Yeah, dude, this is badass.
Sick place.
But yeah, man. So first of all, I appreciate you making the time.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. Yeah, man. Like I said, episode 50.
Big episode, man.
Yeah, bro. I mean, it actually went by kind of quick. We've been doing it for what, like a year, year and a half.
You guys shoot for like one a week or what?
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll be a little bit inconsistent with that, just because our schedules, like, he's a car salesman right now, bro.
Terrible schedule.
His schedule, I mean, he can beat it.
Long hours, huh?
Yeah.
Where at?
Yeah. Sunland Park Dodge, man. Yeah, but I mean, the hours are just unpredictable. I mean, I'm going in on my days off and stuff like that, so.
Now, how do you guys like select the guests, or what is there like a specific theme, or?
So we started off just with friends and family, really, just like, I think the first one is actually with my brother. We were just, the main concept was mental health. We really just came on here. So I went to Arizona State, but I lived out in Phoenix, and then I came back. But the first one was just me talking about like just some of the things I experienced like throughout that time, as far as just, I mean, some of like just anxiety and stuff I was going through.
Yeah.
And then each guest we've had on, we try to really just go more into, yeah, just some of the things that they've been through personally, some of their trials and tribulations. And then slowly but surely, we started really just diving into people of like of influence here in El Paso that people know about, but they haven't really like got to know them on, I guess, a deeper level, you know?
Mm.
So I think it's just been a good opportunity also to like just meet really amazing people. So it's just been a really dope experience just being able to like branch out. But we're really open to interviewing anybody as long
just
as
about.
It's just like a good fit, you know?
Yeah.
Well, 50 is a lot. It's consistency in this game, right?
Right.
I think the stat was I was looking at it. I think it's only like 10% of, or what was it? Like
it was less. Yeah, it was like 5.
Go like past, don't go past episode 10. So it's just like, if we can just keep going, I mean.
And then I think I saw your YouTube. You like started with some travel stuff too, no?
Yeah, so, like, yeah, exactly. So yeah. I moved out to Thailand for a little bit after I graduated and came back. But yeah, I've been all over the place with my content, bro. But it eventually led me here.
But being a content creator is what you've been wanting to do, like,
yeah,
YouTube
for sure.
And
for sure.
Yeah, I noticed your edits are they're getting cleaned, or they're cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And like other people's that I've seen, and
yeah, I appreciate
you're like
it,
behind the camera. It's pretty good. Even your first videos look pretty good.
Yeah, I learned everything from this dude right here.
Your
actually,
brother?
Yeah. So actually, he's so we both work at Neve Collective. It's like a food truck park and a patio bar. So he's an owner. Right now, I'm actually just helping manage and then helping with the content. But that's been, I mean, that's we've. I think that's how we met like a lot of people through the industry and stuff. So. I feel like once you're in it, like...
Yeah, El Paso's a small town.
For sure.
That's dope. Keep hustling, because, you know, you're obviously curious about the space, and, you know, obviously it's being drawn to you, and episode 50, and the consistency is the game, and this might not be... Podcast might not be the end route, but it's going to be what... Like that little toy that turns into something else.
For
you
sure.
Know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And you just got to keep consistent, and then see what door opens up. And,
yes, sir.
But
yeah,
it's been good.
Yeah,
I've been seeing it.
I saw you. You just came back from like a pretty long trip in Europe, right? Mm. Dude, I mean, I was
that
looking
looked
at
lit.
That looked
looked
badass.
Lit.
What destinations did you see?
I went to south of France and Spain. So I'm a nervous flyer, believe it or not, especially long flights.
Mm-hmm. How many hours?
It was like a 9-hour flight to hop over. So I was out there for a minute just to, you know, take advantage of the big trip. But yeah, I try to go once a year on a long trip like that. I love traveling. I think it's like the money best spent. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a kid, I remember my first time on an airplane, I thought it was like so dope. Like mm-hmm. I saw like a business person like going through TSA.
Oh yeah.
And I remember being like, damn, I want to work somewhere where I get to travel for work. And then I remember getting like anxiety on my first like flight, like my first like quote unquote panic attack on a flight. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know if I could do this every day.
Dude, yeah, flights are, especially when once you go overseas, man, that's like,
it's different.
Yeah, being around for sure.
Yeah, I don't like the claustrophobia of just like being stuck, you know, in a seat for hours or whatever it is. So, but once I get there, it's a whole different story.
For sure. Was that, you've been to Europe before?
I have. Yeah.
Kind of to touch back on you being from El Paso and like being born and raised here. What's your take on being from here and starting like businesses and essentially not leaving the city? Did you ever live elsewhere at all?
No, I tried actually. My sister graduated from high school and went to Texas Tech, and I was a terrible student. So when I applied to college, I didn't get accepted to anywhere I applied except for UTEP.
Uh-huh. Except for UTEP. You went to Mountwood?
I went to Mountwood, okay. Yeah. And so in my head, I just thought it was like college and, you know, they would accept you. And I try to get into like super, I knew I wanted to do business, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I try to like apply to like all these like fancy business colleges and they were like, yeah, no, buddy, your grades are terrible. So I ended up staying here, but which is kind of a blessing in disguise. I started working really young and I did well for myself pretty early on. I had a sales job with my parents. It was a, they do roofing and construction, and my dad didn't have any sales guys at that time. It was just him, small mom and pop shop. And so I told him to just pay me a commission, you know, no hourly, no salary, just a flat commission or whatever I brought in. And so I was always more of a creative type, and my dad didn't really have any marketing or logos, or it was just phone book and simple website. I don't even know if he had a website at that time, to be honest with you, just like business cards and stuff. And so I like did a whole little like marketing thing for him. I think I got like his first website, and then I started making commission off of that. And since I didn't get to leave for college, I had lots of friends that did. I had a good friend of mine that went to ASU and some people in Austin. So I would just travel, you know, we'd go to Vegas, we'd go to Phoenix a lot, we'd go to Austin. And that's kind of how I started kind of, you know, exploring other cities early on. And still obviously having home base here.
Yeah. Would you say that traveling and being an entrepreneur, like, do you feel like traveling is a good way to really just help you in that field as well? Like just seeing different places, different ideas, especially being, especially like in the bar industry too as well. Do you feel like that's helped you?
I think traveling was like the best money I spent in that time. And even now, I think it's a good investment. I think... for sure the best money spent has been traveling. I mean, depending on who you ask, like a finance dude or a, I don't know, someone else, they might tell you that's terrible advice. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was money well spent, you know. Well, I was always like a curious kid. And, you know, curiosity sparks interest. And every time I travel, I would, you know, be fascinated by everything, you know. From not even restaurant and bars, just from, you know, everything, just how everything was put together, you know. And early on I kind of figured out like there's so many opportunities in every aspect of any concept. Like to do your food truck probably requires 5, 6, 7 different vendors, you know, moving parts, and there's like a whole ecosystem in that, you know. So I remember looking at the menu and be like, someone prints this menu, someone, you know, comes up with the menu that's on here, and then all that has to get done from, you know, these different places, produce has to be bought here. And so then it fascinated me. I'm like, damn, who built this? Who designed this? Like, where'd they get that light from? The carpet, this, why'd they lay out the restaurant like that? Mm-hmm. And not even just like going to like an old town, like Europe, and just seeing like, I went to this town that was built like in 400 BC And I was like trying to wrap my head around like how long ago that was. It was like before Christians. And they were giving me the whole tour. And I'm like, damn, that was like a long time ago, you know? And just to think of how they were doing things back then. So, yeah, I think if you just like, you know, have an open mind and you're curious, travel's, you know, a good investment in my opinion, for sure.
You said when you were coming up, like you didn't get good grades, especially like coming out of high school, right? What were you like envisioning for yourself? Were you thinking long term, or were you just like kind of going with the flow? Like, what was your headspace at, like when you graduated, for example?
Yeah, I was, you know, I don't consider myself smart. And especially like looking back at that now, I didn't even apply myself or give myself a chance to be a good student. I think everyone has different levels of intelligence. And there's different forms of it, right? And I think in school, it's usually like math, science, you know, language, you know, reading. And the way I learned was not by reading a book. It was not by sitting still. I was always, you know, never diagnosed, but I was always ADD, you know, super hyperactive. And I just like nothing really grabbed my focus in school. So I never really paid much attention to it or put much of an effort into it. Now looking back at it, like the only thing that saved me is I don't even consider it intelligence, but I was always like, you know, a little bit more outgoing. You know, I was always like, I played sports. I was kind of like, I wouldn't consider myself a class clown, but I was kind of like a jokester, right?
Yeah.
So I built some sort of like social skills, you know, and being also kind of like, you know, a little bit more outgoing, I wasn't so shy, right? So I was able to go out and talk to people, go out and do things without having that like embarrassment that a lot of people have, right? Like that communicative. And I think like that was something that helped me kind of later on be a little bit more successful than if I would have gone a different route.
So with that being said, you said you're like a very curious person. So where do you start, like from ground zero, before like you created or built anything? What was your approach to building like the foundation?
I was always kind of intrigued by business, and I, you know, obviously back then I wouldn't consider it business, but I was always intrigued by different things happening around me. I remember, you know, some of my early memories of like watching an award show, and it was Justin Timberlake was like receiving an award, and then, you know, that it was like whatever, and they performed too, and I would think to myself like, that's super cool, right? But I was like, I'm never gonna be Justin Timberlake, like I don't sing, I don't dance. But then they would show the crowd and it was like all the celebrities, but there was a bunch of other people in the stands. And I'd be like, what does that guy do? Why is he there? You know what I mean? And it was like the VMAs. And I'm like, I want to be in the VMAs, but like I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't act. And so I started thinking like, what does that guy do?
Yeah.
And so I guess that was kind of like the plant or the seed that was planted in my head about like entertainment. And obviously being like this like outgoing crazy person, I was always like throwing parties when my parents were out of town. So, you know, everybody wanted to, you know growing up, go to the parties, you know, we wanted to throw the coolest party, me and my friends. And so that kind of started that, and then kind of got into trouble like with that in high school. So my parents were in the construction business. I used to pay one of my dad's workers to buy me the booze for these house parties. And he used to be like, yeah, what do you want? But he used to like mark them up for me, you know? He's going to be like, I'll buy them for you, but I'm going to charge you more. Just, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with your pops or whatever. And so then my other friends were like, well, have him buy me a bottle or a 30 pack or whatever. So then I would mark it up to them. So even back then, I always like had a little hustle in me.
So you're having ragers at your
at my
your
parents' house. Yeah. Ragers, the cops would raid it. Yeah. And I guess that always started like the entertainment thing, but I like the hosting, you know, I like the entertainment space, the hosting. The next week at school, everybody was talking about it, you know, it's a good experience. Hopefully nothing, no fights or anything broke out. And that's kind of what planted the seed. And so when I didn't end up going away to college, I was working with my dad, and the construction is a tough business, you know, roofing, and like the summer was like brutal.
Right.
And so I was just like, well, I remember one day being like, damn, I don't know if I can do this like all the time, you know, like, mad respect to my, you know, pops and my family. They were like hard workers, you know, small mom and pop. Like my dad started the business with nothing. And, but I remember thinking like, dang, I don't know if I can do this. And so, yeah, I just decided to, you know, work in a bar. And I had no idea what that was going to look like. But going back to like my, you know, outgoing personality, I didn't have any like you know, most people would get like embarrassed and just start cold calling bar owners, you know, and like these guys were like cool, intimidating guys at that time. And I remember, you know, calling a few of them, and a lot of them were like, who are you? Like, what do you want to do? You know, this is like before promoters was a thing or before. And I was like, yeah, I want to throw a party. Like, you know, me and my college buddies. And they're like, yeah, no. So I got a bunch of no's.
But were you bar backing or were you bartending?
No, no. I just wanted to go straight into being a promoter. Okay, gotcha. And so, yeah, that's how I met my business partner, actually. My business partner, Kiki, was a little older than me at the time. Well, still, obviously. But he introduced me to some of the bar owners. And I knew him through my sister and through him and him linking me with some of the bar owners.
Was he in the industry already?
No, he wasn't either.
Oh, wow. So you just basically pitched him a plan and were like, how did that kind of happen?
So he was older. I knew him through my sister and I wanted a fake ID. Hmm. So we kind of like, you know, can pass as like brothers, cousins or something. So I used to ask him for his fake ID and he used to be kind of annoyed. And so he used to go out already. He knew some of the people that were out and running the nightlife scene at the time. And one of the bar owners was like, yo, I'm down to give you a try on an off night if you do it with Kiki. And I remember Kiki, I'm like, Kiki, you bring your friends, I bring my friends. Let's throw this party. We'll book a DJ. You know, that's kind of what I always was interested in. When I applied to college, I wanted to be like I wasn't sure if I wanted to be like a music manager or like a business agent. But like in my head, that's kind of what I wanted to be. So I was like, oh, the next thing in line is probably being like a promoter, booking these artists. Yeah. So I remember like seeing, you know, being back to that curious person going to Vegas. And I think I was at, I don't even remember the club, maybe it was Tao. Mm-hmm. And seeing a DJ up there, and it was like DJ Gusto was his name. And so I'm like, who's this guy? And how much would he charge? And he was like a small opener at the time, you know, he wasn't like the Fishers or the John Summit. Yeah. Like these, it was like the openers for those guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I was just like, how can I get that guy to go to El Paso? So there I am, just like, hey, you want to come play in El Paso? How much would you charge? And so that was our first deal. I don't even remember how much we paid him.
It was DJ Gusto, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you literally approached him in Vegas?
Yeah. I don't know if I approached him in Vegas or I just got his contact from Vegas or through social media at the time.
Yeah.
But I remember it was like a super, you know.
Yeah. What year was this? I'm thinking, was there social media at this time? Like Instagram and?
It must have been just Facebook only.
Facebook?
Yeah. Instagram might have been super new.
Okay. So yeah, so what bar was it at too? What?
At the Garden. I
don't know if you remember. Garden. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I've only heard stories about the Garden, man. Like everybody tells me like Garden. Like I just hear, I mean, you guys used to be like brunch parties, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's a whole thing in itself. But like that first party, are you using Facebook to promote? Are you just going like word of mouth? Are you just telling?
Yeah. We were using Facebook. Facebook events was like a thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
This was like before like people were doing marketing spends and all that. And, you know, word of mouth, us personally inviting people. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the first party was small. It was like, you know, not that many people, probably like, I don't know, 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like in a small room. So the Garden had two rooms. It was like the small inside room and they had the big patio. So it was in the inside room. And so it felt busy.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we had a good time.
Was it a Thursday or what?
Yeah, it was like a Thursday, I believe. Okay. And that was like the first event. And so it was a Thursday. It was more people than the Garden's probably ever had on a Thursday. So, you know, the bar owner was like, oh, yeah, we should do this again. So we started doing it again. And like the first year or two that we did it, it was literally just like all for fun. It was no money.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking. It was like free booze.
You're just coming out of pocket to pay the DJs.
Yeah. And we would like charge at the door and we would lose, you know, probably more than we would win with the shows. And sometimes the bars used to cover the cost, you know? Mm. And I didn't really understand the numbers back then.
Right.
And even if I did, I was just more into the party than I was, you know, it was like throwing a party at your house, like when I was in high school.
You know, you were just worried how badass it was.
Yeah.
Like people are
going to have a good time really more than anything.
And this is basically, you know, when I started, you know, I was literally half of my friends were old enough to go to the bar. Half of them were not, you know, we were in that weird age where it's like, we were still doing house parties. We were going out. Everyone had a fake. Mm-hmm. So this was like me transitioning from house parties to like doing, you know, parties at the bar.
Damn. So you weren't even of age at the time.
I must have been 21, maybe 22.
Damn. So you hopped in early.
Yeah. For sure. So
I did, yeah.
So in you and Kiki, what's that dynamic there? Like, did you know, like, when you guys were throwing these parties, were you like, oh, we can definitely, like, do something special? Or was it just, like, you guys are just trying to throw these parties and it gets bigger and bigger every time? Or what was the conversation between, like, the dialogue between you guys at the time?
You know what? It was not, like, there wasn't any, like, crazy, like, you know, you're bringing this to the table, I'm bringing this to the table. Like, we didn't have, like, this, like, yeah. master plan. It was just basically him and his friends. He was kind of, like, a social person, kind of popular in his little circle. I was, like, doing my thing. But we were just, like, you know, dudes that were, like, social.
Yeah.
Right. You know? So it was, like, if we collaborate, it would probably be a better turnout. And I needed him because the bar owner didn't want to, you know, like,
do it without him.
Yeah, he didn't know me.
Yeah.
So he's like, this guy's vouching for you. And I had known Kiki for a couple of years socially. Yeah. But it was good because we both pulled like a different crowd and the event ended up being good. And he had like, we both had like similar tastes, you know. I was a little bit more, I've always liked the art of making a deal. So for me, I was getting more excited about like booking this DJ from Tao and like the contracts and all that, like putting all that together. And he was like really into like the social scene and like who's coming and all that. Sure. So I think that we both fed off of that, each other, to throw the first couple of events.
Do you remember the first one that was like, oh shit, like this is, yeah, like the first one where it was like, damn, this is popping off.
Yeah, I, you know, there was like a few that I remember where I was just like, you know, like there was this one promoter back then and he had like a legit company. And, you know, once we started booking more and more acts, you know, obviously the bigger the DJ or the artist is, the more people would come. And we would do parties with and without DJs. But when we would do these, you know, artists, we would compete with other local promoters. And I remember this promoter was not like super excited that we were competing against him. And that was like my first introduction to like, you know, competition like that. And, you know, he was just like, he said something like, yo, like, you know, this is just like a hobby for y'all. Like, this is my bread and butter. Mm. Like, y'all are having fun. Like, ooh, ooh, ooh. But like,
this is what I do.
Living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he came at me with that energy. Like, you're taking food off my table.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. And, you know, that was my first introduction to like competition and, you know, kind of where we were getting to. And I remember also on the financial, like the business side, we started growing a little bit, right? Where I was just like, yo, this is a lot of effort for us to not make money or to lose money.
Right.
So I remember being a little bit more like having conversations with, you know, the owners at the time about our deal, how much money were we going to make, just taking care of ourselves. Right.
Right.
And so I remember one show specifically, I think, I don't even remember, but I remember it was like a sold out show and it was like our first time we made like real money. And I remember thinking like, all right, like, you know, this might, you know, it's a hobby, but this might be able to be like a legit business, you know? And that's like the first time when I started looking at like setting up an LLC with its own bank account and kind of separating myself from, you know,
just a regular guy.
So that's how J&K officially, like that's when you got the, you started and, the name officially, like you got together.
J&K, and this is how many years into the business already?
Probably two or three.
Two or three.
Yeah. So we used to not, J&K is obviously, you know, stands for Johnny and Kiki, but back then it was like, hosted by Johnny Escalante, or the flyer or whatever would say my name and then his would say his name, so it'd be like, you know, Johnny Escalante and Kiki. It was more like a, you know, back then people wouldn't use email, obviously they'd probably text you, so it was like text Johnny to get in, text Johnny for a table. So it was like our names, right? And so I remember we did one event for Playboy, and Playboy had an event, they were doing like this Playmates, I don't even remember the exact event, but we had a DJ attached to it. And I remember Kiki being like, dude, I don't know if I want my name attached to a Playboy event, you know? This was at the Plum. And I was like, yeah, you're right. He's like, dude, if my mom sees this, and, you know? And I was like, no, for sure. So we ended up just cutting it short, and we just did J&K. And that's kind of how the name stuck, and it just stayed like that. And we never, like, came up with a name or a brand or anything. It just became J&K after that.
When did the day brunch, day party, like, come into the picture?
At that time, more bar owners wanted to work with us or wanted us to do stuff, right? And we had, you know, a successful night at the Garden, and we were doing other shows here and there that were doing well. So, you know, we were getting pulled all sorts of directions, and me just being excited and like, I wanted to do every deal, right? And I remember Kiki kind of being like, yo, chill, we got to be a little bit more, you know, strategic with what we do. We just shouldn't be doing. And we wanted to kind of stay true to, at that time, every bar owner wanted us to do a certain thing, right? They started influencing what we were supposed to do. And I remember back then thinking like, we have to kind of, you know, trust your own gut and stay true to what you think is going to work. Because we started trying different things just because the bar owner wanted us to fill a Sunday night.
Right.
And this person wanted us to do this. And this person wanted us to do that. And so before you know it, we were throwing like whack ass like events for no reason. Right.
All right.
So then we ended up going back to like, what do we want? You know what I mean? What party would I want to go to? And I remember we were like, we should do like a day party, you know, like a Sunday fun day.
And was it a thing? Like, were people trying that at all?
No, I don't think so. And we went to a restaurant that wasn't even open on Sundays. And so we convinced that bar owner to open on a Sunday. And, you know, every bar owner was like, why would you want? I was like, no, we want to do a brunch. We want people to like eat, drink, and then turn it into a party, do like a DJ. And it was at G2, which is a small little place, maybe holds 100 people, 150 people. And it became like a thing. And so after those parties started becoming more and more popular, kind of snowballed to then they became like these massive block parties, you know? And then from there, we kind of, you know, at that time, me personally, Kiki too, but I was really into like this trap rap sound. So we did like this little trap party, and we used to do that every Thursday. And that became like a big thing too. And that kind of turned into Trap Fest, which was like this massive block party. And Trap Fest was another one that, you know, me just never really wanting to get stuck with a certain bar owner or venue. I wanted to kind of see what we can do differently. And so when we started doing these block parties, it was almost like, where could we do this? And, you know, I was like, the Coliseum. We tried a couple shows there, and I'm like, what would be different? What would be cool? What would I want to go to, you know? So I think there used to be the KLEQ Street Fest. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I've heard of it a little bit.
But it used to be like this massive like concert that used to happen downtown, and I used to be like, you know, how can we do that? And going back to like that same curious, not shy person, I was like going to the city, like just like showing up to like the one-stop shop, and they were like, what do you want? I was like, I want to throw a party down there. Like, how do I do it? And they were like, well, you have to go through this, this, and that. And literally hanging out all day, like figuring out the permits. Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's how the brunch started and grew. And that's how we started doing the block parties and all the bigger, larger shows. Yeah.
Dude. So initially you really started going out like prospecting and just talking to people, trying to just meet the right people and asking them questions.
I tell everybody this, like, especially the young kids, I tell them like, the biggest reason why people don't start something is because they're embarrassed or shy, or, you know, they get like self cringe or whatever it is to just like do it, right? They're scared of like, you know, if they're going to look stupid, if they're embarrassed, are people going to share it and make fun of me? And I guess that filter I never really had, where like I can walk into a ask for something not knowing anything and not feel like turned off by it, right? And I remember, like, now looking back, I get the cringe now. But now looking back, like, I had tax questions. I had real estate questions. I didn't know how to sign a lease. But I wasn't really embarrassed to ask. Yeah. And maybe it wasn't even, like, a confidence thing, to be honest with you. It was just, like, I don't know. I just didn't have that, like, part of me that would, like, kind of. And there's a lot of people that don't want to go and just.
What do you attribute that to? You think it was just, like. Like, just, like, your hunger? Like, were you just feeling really motivated at the time to just figure it out?
Or was it just your natural...
Yeah, or do you think you were just being yourself? Like, was it easy for you, kind of, I guess, in a way?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was trained, right? It was just...
Right.
Yeah, no, I think it was just, you know, I was just, like, outspoken, you know? Right. I was just, you know, which got me in trouble a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was never really intimidated either. And so, yeah, I think it was just kind of this trait that I had that a lot of people have, or that a lot of people could develop or could work on, you know? And I think sales helped a lot with that. I think everyone should work a sales job in their life, or even like a waiter, some sort of
service
where you're like, yeah, so you can experience, you know, that communication, the, you know, getting turned down, and not letting, you know, that get to you, you know. Yeah.
I think once you experience that, like, first couple of like either no's or really just like what you see in your eyes as a failure, like you kind of just become, obviously it still affects you, but you're not as affected by it, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I guess for me, like starting the pod, and just talking about like certain like personal things, like at first it was like really hard and it still is, but I think you just, cause I think I'm the opposite. I think I care a lot. And it doesn't like, I still do what I want to do, but I do care about what other people think of me. And
like, we all do. Yeah. Like, we all do. We all are, like, you know, self-conscious. And probably more so that we, like, it's more you than what everyone else, right?
Yeah.
Like, I always make fun of them. Like, you're, like, the only person that rewatches your story more than once, I promise.
Yeah.
Like, no, unless it's, like, a thirst trap maybe, but, like, right. No one cares, you know, and everyone forgets. And, you know, early on, I just never really, I remember this, you know, showing up to a meeting and then, which is, you know, a little disrespectful, but I was waiting for some person and I was putting my foot up on the table as I was waiting. And the guy, you know, later on told me, he's like, man, I walked into that room and I forgot what I was asking for, but it was like, and I remember thinking, what's this little idiot doing with his feet on the, and it wasn't on the table, it was just like another seat that was there. And I wasn't trying to be disrespectful or anything, but the guy was telling me, he's like, this fucking guy came in here, like, but he remembered, you know? And in my head, I was like, dude, I apologize. I didn't mean to be rude, but, you know, I just had that, you know, personality, I guess, where I wasn't really too shy. And I mean, I used to door knock, you know, and try to sell roofs. And that was like probably what kind of helped build that a little bit.
That's a fucking hustle, yo.
And so, like, we just threw our first, like, official event. It was like a live podcast, and just everything that went into that, as far as just like the initial ideation phase and then the marketing, the actual day of and the setup, selling tickets, everything. It was the most, probably the most fulfilling thing, but the most stressful thing I've ever done. And it feels like you're doing something on a much larger scale, much more consistently, almost damn near like every weekend. So like through your experiences, especially first starting out, like how'd you deal with the stress and just like really all the chaos? Because what I always think about is like, isn't Murphy's Law, anything like yeah, go wrong, like will go wrong. I mean, sometimes that's the case, dude. So like, how do you deal with just like the I think you deal like you talked about like organized chaos as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, how do you deal with those like unexpected, you know?
I think like going back to what I said, the hardest part is getting started, you know? Getting yourself out of like, you know, this podcast live thing could go wrong, no one can show up. Once you get past that, getting started is the easy part. And you have a list of what you have to get done, and that list is the to-do list, you know? You have your things. I want it to look like this, and you know what you have to do. Mm. And getting it done, I think, is easy. You know, you figure it out. Like, I have this joke with my team where it's like, you want me to show you how to do it, or you want me to show you a video on YouTube? And I tell them that they can learn anything on a YouTube video, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I started throwing events and, you know, doing these block parties, like, there is no rule book or no handbook for how to do this. There was no like TED Talk. And now like YouTube's a thing, which is why I make that joke. But like, I would just go and ask questions. I would just go and figure it out, you know? And I think when you're like deep in the trenches and you're like working, I feel like you don't allow yourself to stress because you're trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I stress more now when I'm like kind of overseeing a little bit than when I was in there, right? Because you're like, I got to do this next. I got to do this. This didn't work out. I got to figure this out. And it's like working out. Like the first time you go and you run a mile, you know, it's hard or it's this. And then the second time you go, it's a little easier. And then over time, things get easier. And I have to remind myself that all the time, because where we're at now to where we're where we started, so, you know, a big difference, but not really, you know. And I think about where I wish I was, and it's like way more, you know. And I tell myself, why aren't we there yet? And the same reasons that I was scared back then are the same reasons I'm scared now. I was like, if we do an event for 5,000 to 7,000 people, why can't we do one for 15,000, right? Mm. Or why can't we do something just different? And I think the idea is like daunting and it scares a lot of people. But once you get there, you figure it out, you know, and then you look back at it and you're like, wow, that's easy. Now I have a new threshold. Mm-hmm. Now this became easy, right? So I think now, you know, we've obviously built a strong team too, but you do things once, twice, three times, it starts to get easier each time, you know, and then you can start pushing the boundaries of what you can do next and what you want to do next. Mm-hmm. And that's like a hard thing to balance too, but you did the hardest part, which is getting it done. And then once you get done, you reflect back and you have to fix whatever you didn't like in that event and fix it quick and then try to do the next one before you forget, you know?
Sure. Have you dealt with, this is one thing in specific, dude, I feel like people were very last minute about buying tickets. Like, I didn't realize, like, I knew people were saying, even if they said they were going to go, is like, they didn't buy the ticket until like the day of. So it was just like, bro, like, how many people are going to, sure you deal with that, right?
They say El Paso is a last minute market, which it is.
Yeah.
And I've been there. I mean, yeah. I remember throwing up at an event once, like back in the alley, just because it was like super dead and no one was buying tickets. And then it ends up getting super busy, like at the day of, you know?
Right.
And I think that's just, you know, it's the way the market works. And
and
I think right now it's like a very busy, you know, like there's so much content getting pushed out and so much event. There's like so much just getting thrown at you all day, every day. And people don't know what they're going to do this weekend, next weekend, a month from now. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's these larger, you know, obviously big concerts, big festivals, big, you know, you have a vacation planned or whatever. But I think a lot of people wait till the last minute to do something. And I think it's getting worse and worse now with so many options. Yeah. It's like our attention span is getting smaller and smaller. And the, you know, things you can do, whether it's, you know, socially, like in person, or just, you know, virtually, you know, you watch a show, do this, do that, play a game. And yeah, I think it's, you know, people don't plan ahead at all.
For sure. And can you think about like a specific time? I'm sure there's a lot, but where it was like a really big fire you had to put out. Maybe it was like the day of an event, or maybe something just went really wrong when it came to like your promote, like when you first started throwing these big parties, even the block parties and Trap Fest and stuff.
I mean, there's always something that goes wrong, right? Like there's always like a permit that for whatever reason, you know, doesn't pass inspection or whatever. And I've had like a, you know, I don't remember if it was, you know, Lost and Found. I think it was Lost and Found, where we had planned on opening one day and then we didn't pass the inspection and we couldn't open. We had sent out invites and people were coming in for it. So there's been a lot of those moments for sure
that you have to overcome. And so you talked
about the pandemic was probably, like, now that I think about it, the pandemic was probably the worst thing that's happened to us. When it comes to something like that.
Yeah. You know? 'Cause that's when you were opening Hush at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at least when it comes to, just you personally, I mean, you even mentioned like, I'm not sure how old you were, but you mentioned like getting a panic attack, like on a plane and, like you throwing up in an alley before, like before the actual, like the day of the party, you know? So, what's like your experiences, I guess with like, have you experienced like anxiety? And if so, like, how do you deal with that yourself? And how do you overcome that?
Yeah, for sure. I had my first panic attack when I was probably in high school. And I didn't know what it was, you know, I was just feeling like I was going crazy. And I don't even remember what set it off or what. But I remember just being like in panic. Like I couldn't even watch TV. It would like freak me out. And I thought something was wrong with me. Like I was, not that I was going crazy. I thought like either I was going to have a heart attack or I just remember, I just had a panic. Yeah. And I remember telling my parents like, yo, something's wrong with me. I think I'm like getting sick. And they're like, how do you feel? I was like, I don't know. I'm just like, you know, freaking out. And so my mom's like, I think you're good. Just chill out. And so I remember going to the doctor. They did all my vitals and they're like, no, you're perfectly healthy. You just had a panic attack. And I'm like, what the hell is a panic attack? And they basically said, you know, you're stressed out, probably, you know, a lot of things. I don't, I was in high school, so what can I possibly be stressed out about? But then they were like, you know, if some people are just, you know, you can have a chemical imbalance or something. And I remember the doctor said those words, and I was like, what the, like, what's that even mean? You know? And so at, you know, she had prescribed some like medicine, which was probably like a Xanax or a form of it. And my mom was like, my parents are like super strong, you know, super strong, you know, hustlers, you know, like first generation. And my dad was just like, dude, you got to suck it up. Like, this is a mental thing, you know? He always taught to be mentally tough, to be a hard worker. And so my mom was like, I don't want you taking these medicines. You know, you're going to rely on them every time you feel like this. And so I remember back then there was no meditation. It wasn't like it is now, you know, there was no YouTube to get me through it. And I just had to deal with it on my own. Like, I just had to, like, you know, and I became like a hypochondriac after that. Like, I remember thinking to myself, like, damn, like, I didn't make sure that I'm healthy, you know? And I would like go to the doctor and they'd be like, you're good. And I'd be like, all right, cool. Like, I'm good. And so for the longest time, I had to kind of like deal with it on my own and just know that, you know, I'm healthy. I'm not dying. This is just kind of like something that happens. Yeah. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of learned how to deal with that a little bit more. You get under stressful situations, you know, obviously drinking doesn't help, you know, that anxiety. And I've now, you know, throughout the years, I've, you know, gotten better to deal with it, how to cope. Obviously now there's like a lot of tools for it. And now I like look back now and I'm like, man, that was tough. Cause sure. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know it was like a medical thing that, like, you know, maybe I needed to go to therapy or maybe I needed to take medication for real. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't go that route because, you know, maybe I would have been dependent. But I think it did make me a little, you know, mentally tougher, dealing with it on my own and trying to figuring it out. But yeah, it was tough. And I still deal with it today, you know, anxiety and sometimes even depression, you know. The pandemic kind of brought it back, you know.
Yeah.
Working out has helped tremendously, obviously. During the pandemic when we couldn't work out, you know, I felt like my anxiety was getting worse and worse. Also growing up in like that mental toughness, it was kind of like a stigma to talk about it, you know, if you're
right.
Yeah. But now it's a little bit more easy.
For sure. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, man. Cause, and when I hear that, it's like experiencing because I experienced like damn near like the same exact thing. And that's actually what like kind of led me to start the podcast. But it was the same thing, dude. Like in high school, I think it was like my senior year. And I literally felt like, yo, I think I have heart issues or something. Yeah. I literally went through like a whole heart scan, like everything, like, no, like it's anxiety.
Yeah, so me it too, was just, actually, yeah.
And I went to college, started getting panic attacks there, went to the doctor again. And yeah, it was just like anxiety, but it was just so hard for me to get through my head that's what it was, because I guess when you're in that moment, you can make yourself believe a lot of things, especially when it comes to your health, you know?
And you make it worse. I tell people that, like, I've told my friends and, you know, family even, like, it's hard for me to explain how I feel in that moment or when I was having these issues. I can't even, like, put it into words what I'm feeling, right? So it's like, I don't expect them to understand. But, like, I remember, like, you know, certain things used to get me nervous and I used to avoid. And I wouldn't expect, you know, my sister or my brother to be like, I understand what you're going through, because you're not, like, you have to kind of deal with it on your own and like kind of deal with it or talk to someone that kind of has had the same issues, because a lot of people can't relate,
right?
And now looking back at it, at some of those moments, like you were saying, when you were having like the heart palpitation, you thought something was wrong with you, you know, I think for me having those scares but then also them telling me like, yo, you're fine, also like kind of helped me talk to myself and be like, all right, dude, you're good. Because for me, my anxiety would trigger me, like, and I guess everyone's different, but my anxiety would, like, something was bad was gonna happen to me.
Yeah.
And so those little, like, when, you know, those medical checkups were kind of, and I think that's why, another reason why I've always tried to, like, you know, stay in somewhat shape and
for sure
take care of myself a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
to help with that.
Now there's definitely a lot of tools that are helpful. Sometimes nothing fucking helps. You just have to kind of like ride the wave, but not for sure. Especially like I see you cold plunge as well.
Yeah,
that I feel, it's like fire. That's that's a game changer for sure too. But
if they come out like in, you know, whatever in the future, and they say that like the whole cold plunge thing was a hoax, I'm gonna be so pissed.
You're just fucking, dude, those 5 minutes or whatever are just brutal.
Yeah, terrible. And I think, you know, like maybe you're the same way, and I think people that are like hyperactive, whether it's, you know, you can, I learned how to use the anxiety for good, because if you're like hyperactive and you're like thinking, when I would get in these moments, it was very hard for me to quiet the mind, you know, even for a while, like going to sleep sometimes tough, because I go to bed and I start thinking about something and I just can't shut it off, right? Whatever part of the brain that is, it just keeps going. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that brain was what was keeping me going for other things. Mm-hmm. So learning how to channel that energy to be like busy and working on new things, and you know, if your brain doesn't want to shut up, use it for something good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kept me active and social, and always trying different things, you know, shifting that energy for good.
For sure. So a place that we've visit like very often, especially like our age group at this point, dude, later, like that's a completely, like that's a monster right now. And it has been for, I mean, even when I think you were, what, like even like your generation, dude, was that was your spot too when you were going out. So where did like the initial plans for later, when did that start and how did it start?
It goes back to like, you know, being, you know, in the promotion scene and asking ourselves, you know, as like a business owner, you want whatever you're selling, like you need to be your own consumer too. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've always said that we want whatever we do for us to enjoy. Like, I don't ever want to be a part of a business that I won't want to be involved with or go to. Or, and at that time, we wanted a place that was not like a DJ party. We wanted kind of like a, you know, social, you know, we called it like a, you know, like a bar. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the idea of later came. And we wanted like a smaller place that wasn't so big, that can be open, you know, 7 days a week, and you know, that could have a DJ or not have a DJ, that just has good drinks, and that was like in a cool spot. And so that's kind of the idea of later came. You know, it was a house, and you know, we knew that the ballpark was coming there. It's actually how I met Renard Johnson. Oh, wow. Not how I met him, but how I like reconnected with him, because I had met him when I was door knocking and selling. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It was like crazy
15 years ago or 20 years ago. And so that opportunity came, and from traveling, going to Austin, I saw Rainy Street, and I thought it was like the coolest thing. I was like a young college kid, and I'm like, oh shit. And I'm like, why don't we do that here? You know? And that's kind of how that idea came.
So that house, before you went, was there someone living in it before? Or obviously there's someone living in it, but was it abandoned for a while? Or
no, there was someone living in it. Oh, yeah. Shit. There was someone living in it. And so the guy that owned the house, when he showed it to me, I had a coordinate with the tenant, and she's like, oh, are you moving in here? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. And so when her lease ended, we took it over, and then we had to go through the whole process. And turning a residential building into a commercial, not only a commercial, like a place of assembly is what they call it at the city, which is not going to be like a, you know, like some houses, they have like lawyers' offices, or that's like, you know, there's going to be a 2-3 people. But when you're going to have lots of people hanging out, it's a whole different permit. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know that when I made the deal. And I had to go to the city, and then I'm like, wait, what do you mean I have to do this? I have to do a handicap ramp. I have to do how many restrooms? I have to have parking. Damn. So then it opened up a whole different can of worms. Yeah. That, like, going back to, like, the anxiety and stress, like, oh, shit. Like, you start freaking out. I just signed this lease. Like, now I'm on the hook financially. My dad told me not to do it. Mm. Everyone told me not to do it. And then you just, you know, get caught in the trenches. And once you're in there, it's kind of hard to, you know, freak out when you have shit to do.
So that's another, that's a big one. Like, how many people like were telling you no? And I mean, you said your dad was telling you no. So how do you go about like being sure in an idea that the people around you don't really believe in? I mean,
you know, like when I started seeing, you know, therapy, once I started getting a little older. So I've been, you know, talking to a therapist probably now for 4 years. And everyone thought I was weird, even like saying it out loud. People probably think that's weird. And like my sister was like, man, you're going Hollywood or whatever it is. But the reason why I say, or I think that it was good for me, is no matter who you talk to, whether it's your family, your business partner, your girlfriend or boyfriend, your teachers, even if they want the very best for you, they're going to have their own version and their own ideas of how that works, right? So they're going to have their own personal interest, whether it's intentional or not, whether it's, you know, malicious or not, or good intent. They're going to have their idea of what's best for you, and only you know. So I remember talking to a therapist. I wanted someone that, you know, I can, they have no benefit of what I say. I just want to hear myself talk and get like a third person perspective on, you know, whatever's going on in my life. And I think, you know, when I did later, my dad obviously is a big important person in my life, and he was like, no, this is a terrible idea. What are you doing? You know, there was, and you know, other people were kind of like, this is kind of, you know, crazy. But my gut, my intuition was like, no, it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, always kind of know what's right. You know, your intuition, if you have a pretty good judgment, hopefully everyone does. If you kind of just listen to that, you kind of know it's a good idea. And I just knew deep down, like, there was no doubts my head that it was going to work. And I knew the deal was good, you know, even though I didn't really understand it at that time. So just like, you know, I'll figure it out.
Yeah. So you eventually like jump through all these hoops. You're able to open later. And you said the ballpark opens like around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even remember if the ballpark was already open or not, but it was around that time. It was like new.
And, would you say, cause it's evolved over time, right? I mean, you said it was, I think when you were going, it was like a lot more chill. I think it was, like you said, it was just a place for people to go talk and hang out, have a drink.
Yeah.
Now when we go, like we kind of rage there now. So like, how did that evolution come about? And why do you think it kind of evolved into that as well?
I think it's just like also the neighborhood. At that time, Blackbird was there. Blackbird was like a, you know, more of a chill bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like a more of a neighborhood. And I think we were doing a bunch of the, you know, the party stuff in Union Plaza, which is the garden and all that.
Yeah.
So when that kind of district died down, it kind of shifted a little bit. And I think that's where you got a little bit more energy.
Right.
And we started kind of getting a little bit more involved with like the DJs and the booking. So we started booking a lot of locals. So we have a bunch of local DJs that, you know, play there on the weekends. And, you know, it's become like a fun spot, you know, on the weekends.
Yeah, for sure. How do you know when to, I guess as like just a business owner and maybe in the bar industry as well, I feel like you have to constantly evolve and really just learn and do those type of things. But like, how do you know when you should like, maybe stick to your gut and stick to like, or not stick to your gut, but stick to what's like working. And then as opposed to like, oh, maybe we should make this change here, you know?
I think, yeah, like that's like the fun part about, you know, this, it's like the creativity of what you want. And I think what we wanted to do with our concepts and as a company, you know, we're called, you know, the hospitality is called like Creative Growth. And we always wanted to kind of push the boundaries of entertainment in El Paso. You know, and not that we wanted to be like big cities, but we wanted to have the same quality of major markets. And so we wanted to see what can we do that's next and upcoming and cool, without going, you know, over people's heads, that's going to work, you know? And the most important, like being cool is cool, but making money is obviously the goal. You can't do one without the other. And so I think we're always trying different things to see what works, what the people respond to, but what's going in a direction that we believe in, something that we want to be participating in. We just don't want to do things for money grabs, you know. I think we're in this for the long haul, and, you know, we want to have, you know, durable brands, you know. We don't want to be hot one moment and not the next, you know? So we want to be strategic in what we decide. And some of the things that we try or we do or we evolve, they might not come off as super strategic. And sometimes, you know, they might not be super strategic, but there's like a direction that we have, like as a company culture of where we want to go. So it doesn't matter, you know, how we get there and how long it takes, as long as we're kind of still going in that area. That's kind of how I would say we try how to involve some of the brands.
For sure. And so from Later, I think this, it was it Born and Raised?
Born after and Raised,
that?
Yeah.
So that was like your first, you guys expanded to the East Side.
Yeah.
Was that your only East Side bar to date?
Yeah.
Yeah, your only project. That was our only one. So what was it about Born and Raised? Because I personally didn't. I think I was probably too young. But what was that like? And what was the difference between like something like Later, being like, especially in downtown, and then having your spot on the East Side? Like, what was the comparison and difference between the two?
See, Born and Raised became something that was like a big, you know, lesson for us. And it was something that was motivated for the wrong reasons, right? We wanted a big place that was going to fit a lot of people. And we wanted a kitchen, and we wanted to do brunches, and we wanted to do happy hours, and we wanted to do sports. And it's like, we wanted to do everything. And it was far away from where we were. So like managing it wasn't easy, right? From where I live, it was like a 30, 35 minute drive there, 30, 35 minute back. And it was just so big. It was hard to keep it busy, you know, 3, 4, 5 times out of the week. And we were trying to do too much. And so, you know, it did great actually for a year and a half, and it just became harder and harder to manage it. And we wanted to focus kind of in the downtown, what I call the little triangle. And it just didn't make sense for us anymore. So that's when we ended up selling it.
Yeah. So what's the triangle for you?
I think like every, you know, city has like where, like there's going to be like these cool concepts and like, you know, where you can do things that are a little bit more out of the box. And I think that's like UTEP uptown, they call it uptown, downtown, and I think central.
Right? Okay.
That's where like I think a lot of people are doing cool things and like cool venues. And that's kind of where I like it. That's kind of where I see the energy right now.
For sure. I mean, and then Lost and Found is right after Born and Raised.
Yeah. Lost and Found.
And that one, like when I was talking to Junie, he said it was like more like a, I guess like a Miami type of feel.
Yeah.
Obviously now you use it, like you host a lot of, definitely a lot of DJs there. It's a venue currently right now.
Yeah.
So how did Lost and Found come about?
So Lost and Found was, we wanted to do something in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati was another, you know, it's been an entertainment district that's gone, you know, up and down throughout the years. It's been around since probably, I don't know, 70s, 80s. And so we wanted to have some sort of presence in that area, in that neighborhood. And same thing, it was, you know, the pandemic was one that, you know, we had, you know, 7 days a week. We were open before the pandemic happened. It kind of like shifted us a little bit, and we were kind of doing this DJ concert series that was doing really well. So we ended up just shifting and focusing on that, and kind of expanding that, and that kind of led us to do some stuff at, you know, the Elmont, that we're kind of doing a little Lost and Found takeover that we did this series, and we're going to start focusing a little bit more on, you know, doing more concerts like that in different locations.
For sure. And then you like Hush Hush is for sure, it's like super unique, man. Like that whole concept of like, it's like a, it feels like Middle Eastern, but then you kind of get like a little bit of like Mexico vibe too. And that one opened, you were working on that one during the pandemic.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration for that one? And then what were the challenges that came about with Hush Hush, especially during the pandemic?
So we bought that place like in, November of 2019. And we said we were just going to keep it running through the holidays, and then January, February, we were going to close it and remodel it. And, you know, we didn't have any of these crazy plans. The place was actually quite popular. It was doing well. And we were going to do some, you know, small TLC to it. And then the pandemic hit. And so then we, you know, we're kind of, you know, thinking about, you know, when are we going to be open? And we just never knew.
Yeah.
And so the more time we had to sit on it, the more time we had to think about, you know. And my dumb ass was like, oh, maybe we should do a rooftop on it. And, you know, so I sat with engineers and, you know, structural guys, and like, what do we have to do to put a rooftop? How much would it cost? And I just had the time to. And so I guess the time kind of helped, which was a blessing in disguise now that I look back at it, because we kind of did a complete 180 on the concept there. And the inspiration was a little bit, yeah, you're right, like Moroccan, Mexican, like an hacienda kind of thing. that also felt like El Paso, and you know, a bunch of the plants are from like native plants in the area. And yeah, we, you know, we're, I tell people, we're not in the bar business, we're in the brand business, you know. Yeah. We like to create brands and experiences, right? Because you can have a Bud Light or a vodka soda or whatever you drink anywhere, but the experience and like the brand is where, why people come back, I think. And that's what we like to give people, an experience and create a good brand
for sure
that they can expect quality from.
Yeah. When it comes to like the people you work with, like your business partners, and especially the people that work under you, what is the main thing? Obviously there's a lot of qualities that I'm sure you look at, but what is something that is maybe like uncompromisable for you if you're gonna be working with someone?
You know, like building a team, you want a bunch of like A players, right? And figuring that out is not always easy. You know, you want to build a good culture. You want people that want to work for you and that are excited. And I think what it boils down to is, you know, hiring people that love what they're doing and believe in the brand and the direction that it's heading in. And, you know, at the end of the day, I like to hire people that are workers, you know. I'm kind of like all over the place with the schedule. I'm up early, you know, which is kind of weird for a bar owner to say. And I don't really go out, you know, as much as I used to. So sometimes I'm, you know, texting really early. Sometimes, you know, the guys are out late.
Are you up at like 5 a.m.?
It just depends. Yeah. But I'm kind of like an early. And I've been like that since the construction, you know, like growing up in a construction family where, you know, in the roofing, you try to beat the sun. So you're up early. So yeah, just people that are going to put their head down and work, like they're going to like not complain about it, you know? And I think that's, work ethic is, it's another thing that's not taught. And so you want people that are hard workers, and with hard work, you know, it doesn't really matter the intelligence level as much. I think, you know, like I said, I wasn't a smart person and I was able to figure it out. And if someone's smart or someone has hard work ethic, they're going to figure it out. They're going to be smart enough to figure it out. And yeah, just, you know, once that happens, I like to put people in positions that, you know, I'm like a master delegator, I feel like. And, you know, finding talent, you know, recruiting talent is probably something that I think that I consider myself really good at, finding these people that are, you know, super good at what they do, and then giving them, you know, going back to my stupid YouTube comment, like there's no rule book or no guidebook. There's no like, these are the steps, you know. If you're a pharmacist, you're like, yo, this is how you make this shit. This is, you know, and for us, it's like, there's none of that, right? We kind of create our own template. And so sometimes I'm like, hey, I want this. I don't care how you do it, but this is kind of the end goal. And, you know, I've had to have that conversation with some of the people that work for us and just be like, dude, you can do it however you want to do it. This is how I like to see it. If it works for you, cool. And if it doesn't, and yeah. And then you get to a certain point where, you know, you want to hire people that if they were to quit, you're kind of like, oh, fuck, what am I going to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's how you identify, yeah, with like an A player. And if you're, you know, if someone walks in and says like, dude, I'm out, like, I'm going to put in my 2-week notice, and you can tell that person you can leave today, then you know that's not an A player, you know?
Right.
So, which is kind of scary to think about, but, yeah. But being also like the, you know, the business owner, you remember that you kind of did all that growing up, you know? Yeah. So you kind of want to instill that same kind of like, yo, figure this shit out.
You and like Kiki's relationship, being that you guys were friends before and you guys are still like best friends. I mean, we're best friends as well. And we're obviously, I mean, we do business together and we want to continue to do different, I mean, a lot of different ventures and do things together. And we're still navigating that relationship as well. But more than anything, it's like we're best friends first. But for you and Kiki, like how did, especially over the years, how did that relationship work, and what is just that dynamic, and how have you guys been able to just like continuously like just do great things together?
Yeah, so you know, they always say that like a business partner is like, you know, like your marriage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. It becomes like your you know, person that you're breaking bread with ultimately every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're gonna have ups and downs in that relationship, you know. It's going to be good months, bad months, good years, bad years. You guys are not always going to get along. But if the end goal is the same and you guys are both kind of wanting the same thing and the visions are aligned, then that's all you need, you know. Mm-hmm. And trust, respect, knowing deep down you have each other's back, you know. And yeah, when Kiki and I started, like, it was all fun, you know. And then it was like, oh shit, like, now we have to do payroll and taxes and this and that, like, it's not as sexy, right? It's like, right, you start dating a girl and it's like all fun, vacation, and the honeymoon's over and you're like, oh fuck, now I gotta put in the work.
Yeah,
right. And I think Kiki and I, for the first couple years, we were like co-CEOing things. And I don't even want to use that term because it wasn't even formal at all. But we were both like, we didn't separate what we, our strengths and weaknesses, right? We were kind of, and I knew he didn't want to do certain shit that I didn't want to do either, but it was like, it had to get done. And, you know, you just kind of start figuring out like your own lanes, your strengths, weaknesses. And then you have to like, kind of, you know, figure out, what am I doing? What are you doing? What are you good at? What am I good at? And the things that you guys are good at together. And there's certain things that, like, I tell Kiki, like, that's, you know, that's your department.
Yeah.
And there's certain things that he tells me, like, yo, that's on you. And just having that kind of respect, and we lean on each other, I think that's very important.
Sure.
And same thing with Junie. Junie was like a super A player. Yeah, you know what I mean? Sure. Like, Junie was our first, you know, person that worked with us. And he just became so instrumental to our company that, you know, we made him a partner. We're like, dude, you're part of the brand now. You're an owner now. Because that's someone that we didn't want to lose, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And so, for someone who is maybe, I mean, it can be different industries. If they, when it comes to business, in their personal life, mentally, what would you say to someone who has like experienced like just a major setback in their life? What would you say to them, like, based on your own experiences, whenever you encountered just a setback, something that maybe was like the panic attacks, anxiety, or just something that happened in the business that was like, felt like detrimental in the moment? Someone who's going through that right now, like, what is some advice you would give them?
I mean, you know, I tell everyone that, you know, no difficult time lasts forever, and also nothing great. You know, you can't ride a high all the time, but the lows will not always be lows. And the punches you take now that seem like they're going to knock you out, you look back at them a year later and you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? I remember going through like certain things early on that I was just like, holy shit, like, this is it. This is the end. Like, I can die right now and all my anxieties will go away and all my problems will go away.
Dude.
And then you figure it out and then you're like, oh shit, that wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Like, whether you're religious or not, like, the world has a way of figuring it out, you know? And I tell people that all the time. Like, you put yourself in these situations where you're like, oh shit, how am I going to make it out of this? Or how am I even going to make this work? And somehow it does, you know, whether you believe in God or energies or whatever. And I think you just have to like really trust your gut and your intuition. And if you can't trust your own gut, you should be working for somebody else. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But if you like truly deep down trust your gut and your intuition, just, you know, keep going through it and you'll come out of it for sure. And just trust in that and, you know, hard work.
For sure. Oh yeah, man. Well, that is episode 50 of The Most Vulnerable Player with Johnny Escalante. First of all, man, we really appreciate your time. We know you're super busy. You got a lot of stuff going on, especially in the, I mean, next coming week. So really appreciate your time, man. It was a pleasure. And you got anything, Mr. Curry?
Nah, man. Just want to say thank you as well, man. And we appreciate you being on the show, man.
Thanks, sure. Guys. Keep going.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.